welcome to greet you in the name of Jesus, the one who gives us refuge from the storm. Appreciated those thoughts. Scripture is full of beautiful imagery like that of God being the shade or the cleft in the rock or like a mother hen and other imagery as well, where it's a refuge, a place where we can go to in time of need. And I trust that we find ourselves in that place this morning, as having seeking to live our lives in that shade, under that protection that's offered to us. Last October, I preached two sermons on the doctrine of non-resistance, and I tried to expound on the teachings of Christ with the fulfillment of Old Testament law and now the way of peace that we are called to. Non-resistance, or we might say Jesus' way of peace, is far more than simply refusing to fight in war, but it's a way of life that pursues peace, that's motivated by our love for our Lord and our love for our fellow man. And as I was considering what to share, as I was considering this past week what to share here this morning, the thought came to me to share a very practical message, maybe not as much doctrinal, although I think to some extent doctrine is practical, and what's practical is also doctrinal, but to share a practical message on approaching conflicts in a peaceable and God-honoring way. And so I've simply titled the message, Pursuing Peace in Conflict. There are many verses in the Bible, particularly in the New Testament, that exhort us in that, not to just avoid violence or to avoid aggression, but to pursue peace. And I'll just read a few of them. One of them is Romans chapter 12, verse 18. If it be possible, as much as lies in you, live peaceably with all men. So to the extent that you can, as much as within you, to pursue peace. And then we have the account there in Matthew chapter 5. It's recording the Sermon on the Mount, the portion that we refer to as the Beatitudes, and Jesus is teaching. And we have that, we might say, famous quote there in verse 9 of chapter 5, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God." Blessed are the peacemakers. There's many more that could be listed, but spot there is in 2 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 11. "Finally, brethren, farewell, be perfect, be of good comfort, be of one mind, live in peace, and the God of love and peace shall be with you." Living in peace, being peacemakers, is what is part, I think, is part of what we're called to as Christians. Now, some might look at these verses of peace and conclude that means that we should never object to anything and we should just put up with anything in order to keep the peace. But I don't think that's what these verses are communicating. And there certainly are times where we need to put up with things we would rather not. But there's also times when we can't compromise. It's a right and wrong issue. We're unable to give in. And simply refraining from bringing up anything that might be controversial or any point of disagreement does not necessarily result in peace. That's not always an option to say, well, I'm just going to avoid it. I'm not going to go there. We find ourselves in times where there's disagreements, where we can't avoid it, and simply giving up or not saying anything isn't always an option and doesn't always result in peace. And sometimes we find ourselves in a situation where the conflict isn't between us and another person, but we're maybe the third party. We're involved in the situation. And certainly in those situations, we're not in between the conflict as such. And so simply giving up our desires doesn't bring peace either. So there's a bit more to it, I think, than just that. And the Beatitudes there, where Christ pronounces blessing on the peacemaker, shows us that we're not only to live in peace ourselves, but we should be peacemakers. We should be helping make peace in the situations around us. It goes beyond simply living in peace ourselves, but to be peacemakers. And we're certainly called to self-sacrifice. The New Testament instruction to pursue peace, as I mentioned, I don't think is simply a direction to avoid anything controversial or to never let our voice be heard. And we can see in the life of Christ, in the life of the early church, the apostles, it's not that they just skirted around difficult topics. But this pursuing peace it's pursuing peace, and it's working together in the midst of conflict. It's not avoiding all conflict, but it's pursuing peace in the middle of it or through it. The goal is not to avoid all areas of disagreement, but to address them, to speak about them in a peaceable way. And I think it's helpful to remember, and something I've certainly had to learn over the years as one that I can sometimes shy away from disagreements, maybe even more than I should. But disagreements or conflicts aren't necessarily bad. They can become bad, and it can become a very contentious issue. But the presence of a disagreement, if it's worked through in a way that's peaceable, can actually lead to a deeper relationship than what was there before. If we approach it with humility, if we approach it with peace, with a desire for peace, we can come to a deeper and a better place than what we were even to start with. And the fact is that if there's a big area of disagreement and I simply avoid talking about it, I simply avoid going there, what I end up with isn't really peace. It's just kind of a temporary truce, or to use kind of military language, it's like a ceasefire. It's not really peace. It's just kind of, it stalls it for a moment. And often what happens when we refuse to address or talk about areas that we disagree with, it actually breeds more conflict in the long run when we can't talk. But through it all, we're called to be peacemakers, to pursue peace. And as I was thinking about this topic, I was reminded of just how interconnected various aspects of our spiritual lives are. I thought, well, you can hardly talk about peace without talking about love. And well, you can't talk about love without talking about Christ. And you can't talk about Christ without talking about the cross. And you can't talk about cross without talking about, you know, self-sacrifice. And you can go on and on in that way. But I was reminded of just how much our spiritual lives are connected. We can't isolate our spiritual lives. If we might say that that it's impossible to pick and choose what parts of the gospel we want to follow and to be successful in it. It's all connected. It's all together. If you're living in sin in one area, it will most definitely affect another area as well. So as I recognize just how interconnected our spiritual lives are, and that I won't in any way give a comprehensive explanation of how to find peace, because, well, it really takes all of our life. But I trust with God's help here, we can look at a couple foundational principles that will help us be the peacemakers. Blessed are the peacemakers. I think on a very foundational level, if we want to be peacemakers, we must be children of the Prince of Peace. It has to start there. If we want to carry out that calling, we need to be children of the Prince of Peace himself. We need the peace of God in our hearts if we want to bring peace to the situations around us. We need a love for our fellow man, and we need to be willing to lose sight of ourselves. But I said this sermon will be practical, so I'd like to look at some practical tips that I think are helpful and rooted in Scripture in dealing with areas of disagreement. You may find yourself in a situation where there's a lot of conflict. You might even call it an argument, or bad feelings, or bitterness, or a rift in the relationship. And it might involve you and another person, or maybe you're just a bystander, and you're trying to resolve it. And so, at that point, sometimes the abstract doesn't seem very helpful. Right? Well, what do I do now? How do I go from here? How do I get from where I am to a place of peace? And I won't give you a three-step process where it's do this, this, and this, and in the end, everything will be perfect. I don't think that's quite that simple. And I also recognize that if one party has no desire to resolve a conflict, you cannot force peace. And I think that's why Romans chapter 12, verse 18 that I read there tells us, as much as possible, or as much as lies within you, live in peace. Even if we're in a situation where the person that has something against us has no desire for peace, we're still called to do our part, to still respond in a peaceable way, as much as lieth within you. So looking at some practical biblical tips for those moments where tensions are high, where there's a disagreement. And I have a list of about 4 or 5 points here, and some of them have sub-points that I'd like to expound on a bit. But the first is listen to understand. Truly listen. Try to understand. There's a saying that I often think about, perhaps partly because I found it to be true even in my own life. And the saying is this: most people do not listen to understand, they listen to respond. And that's especially true in times of conflict when emotions are high. There's a tendency for all of us, I think, to listen only long enough to form a quick conclusion about what we think the other person is thinking. We listen until we think, oh, okay, I think I know where they're coming from. And then there's a temptation to stop listening and to start formulating a response. Even while the other person's still talking, we often tend to stop listening. And very often, our assumptions are wrong if we don't truly listen. And it often leads to people interrupting each other, and that just leads to even more conflict. I saw that play out not too long ago at work, where there was a little bit of a conflict between a coworker of mine and a patient, and it was so easy to see that you're not even understanding each other, because the one person would start talking and then the other person would interrupt because they thought they understood what the other person was saying. But standing to the side, I could see, no, you actually just wait a little bit. You don't actually understand what's being said. But that's our tendency. And if you think about it, if we interrupt in a conversation, we jump to a conclusion and we interrupt, it's really kind of just a slightly less rude of telling the other person to be quiet. I'm done now. It's kind of what we're communicating if we don't let them finish. If you want to be a peacemaker, you need to be slow to speak and to really deeply listen to what the other person is saying. James chapter 1, verse 19 gives us some direction on this. It says, "Wherefore, my beloved brethren, let every man be swift to hear, slow to speak, and slow to wrath." We need to focus on genuinely listening to everything that the other person has to say, even if we think they're a little bit long-winded. I think I understand now. But to be swift to hear, to be slow to speak. And that requires humility on our part, because it's acknowledging that we don't have, or we might not have, a full understanding of the situation yet. Our knowledge is incomplete, and we're dependent on listening to them and to try and learn. I might not really understand it yet. I need to listen as the other person speaks. It requires humility, and I need not tell you that humility certainly is a Christian virtue. As we're trying to live that out and to be swift to hear, it's often helpful to repeat what you think the other person is saying in your own words, to repeat it back. Well, what I'm hearing you say, and then to put it in your own words. And that serves two purposes. One, when you do that, is the other person feels heard because they see that you're actually listening to what they have to say. And the second purpose that it serves is it helps determine whether or not you understood correctly. Because we need to have that humility and recognizing that I might be wrong. I might be misunderstanding the other person. And so when we take a moment to say, this is what I think I'm hearing, it serves those, it's a humble approach that helps the other person feel heard and helps us determine whether or not we're actually hearing correctly. Along with that, it can be helpful to ask clarifying questions. And remember, we're still in the listening phase here. We haven't responded yet. And so sometimes after a person has a bunch to say, maybe it's very heated, the tendency is to respond with some statement. But maybe you need more information first. Maybe there's a clarifying question that needs to be that needs to be asked. And it's usually when a person's requesting something, the thing that they're requesting is not the end product of what they want. It's simply they believe they need that thing that they're requesting to get to the end goal. And by really listening, you can help understand, well, What is it that they're requesting, but where are they really trying, what are they trying to accomplish? Because it's often not the same thing. And the classic example of that, and you may have heard this before, is I think in different books and so forth, is you have a scenario where you have, and it's almost a comically simple scenario just to make a point, but you have two people and they're fighting over a lemon. And they both want the lemon, and they want it badly. And at first glance, you look at that and you think, well, one of them's going to have to give up. There's only one lemon. Or maybe you can cut it in half and they have to compromise and they only get half of what they want. But when you dig in a little bit deeper and you ask them, well, why do you want the lemon? And then you find out, well, the one person wants lemonade and the other person wants the peel because they're making some sort of lemon jelly. Well, now they can both be happy. One person gets the peel and the other person gets the fruit. And so it's just it's almost a comical example of how what we say we want or what a person is requesting usually isn't the end product. It's simply they think they need that in order to get where they want. I need the lemon because I want lemonade. And in actively listening and really trying to understand what's the heart of the matter, we can often dig a little bit deeper and try to find out, well, what is it that you truly need? How can we get there? And then sometimes it can be resolved without and both parties can get what they want. Not always, but sometimes if we're willing to listen and to dig deeper. And I'd like to just keep that example in the back of your mind, because it's a helpful little example in a couple different ways. And I may mention that later. And you don't really figure that out. You don't really figure out, well, what are they really trying to accomplish, unless you take that moment to really listen, to be swift to listen. That in the example I referenced earlier, where there was a little bit of a conflict between a coworker of mine and a patient, it was just that. It was actually both parties could be happy. The patient didn't want to move, and the assumption from my coworker was automatically, well, you know, you just lazy or you're tired or not wanting to get with the program, you know, you're here to get better. And the reality was, his back hurt. And so it's not that he didn't want to move, he just wanted to be careful. But neither of them were really listening. And so often when we take that moment to really listen, to really try to understand, to listen to understand instead of listen to respond, it goes a long way in making peace. My second point in dealing with disagreements is to remember that it's not about winning or losing. You don't want to frame the situation in that way. You don't want to think of it in terms of, well, there's a winner and there's a loser. But a peacemaker is looking at it in terms of, what's a peaceful resolution? What's a path forward? A peaceful way of working together? It's not about who wins and who loses. And that generally requires crucifying the flesh, because the tendency of most people in a conflict when emotions are high is to get in that defensive frame of mind. Well, I'm not going to lose this, or I'm going to win. And so sometimes those are moments where we have to crucify the flesh, and we have to say, well, this is not about winning and losing. It's about finding a peaceful way forward. Galatians 5:24, they that are Christ's have crucified the flesh with the affections and lust. And when we think of crucifying the flesh, often we think of maybe big temptations, or maybe it's a big situation where you feel God is calling you one way and you really don't want to go that way, and it certainly does include those. But often crucifying the flesh is those little moment-by-moment things throughout the day where I'm tempted to kind of have it centered around me. Seeing all conflicts in terms of winning and losing really is a selfish way of looking at it. Because what's at the center of that, when we think of it in terms of winning and losing, we want to put ourselves on the winning side. And we want to put the other person on the losing side. They need to understand where I'm coming from. I'm right in this. But that's a self-centered focus. It's seeing the whole situation in terms of I will win. It's about I. It's about me. And that leads me to my next point in dealing with conflict, is you need to get yourself out of the way. It's not about you. It's not about me. And it's very closely related to, I was debating whether or not I make this a separate point, but it's very closely related to not seeing every conflict in terms of winners or losers. I need to accept that the central thing here, even if it's between me and another person, it's not about me. I need to get myself out of the way. Conflicts very quickly and very often become personal. Even if it doesn't start there, that's often where it ends up, especially if peace is not pursued. But as peacemakers, we want to keep the focus on the problem, not the character of the people that are involved. But what's the problem? What's the source of conflict? How can we move forward in that? And sometimes it's about something you did or something you said. And it can seem very personal. But I would say even then, it doesn't need to be taken as a personal attack on you as a person, even if it was meant that way. You don't have to receive it that way. And I'll try to expound on that, clarify that a little bit. If you have done wrong, it is important to acknowledge and to apologize. That is very important. And if someone has a grievance against you, but you don't feel that you have necessarily sinned, you still want to work at resolving the conflict. But what I mean by saying we need to get ourselves out of the way is that even if it's someone has a personal grievance against us or us against them, when it seems very personal, the main focus should not be how do I best benefit myself. That doesn't lead to peace. And it's a self-centered focus. The focus cannot be primarily on ourselves. If there's sin on your part, you want to focus on purging sin from your life. Focus is on how do I become more godly, more Christ-like. Or if there's a grievance without a sin, maybe the focus is on working together. You might focus on holiness before God if you have erred in some way. You might focus on unnecessarily irritating the person that has a grievance against you. You might focus on, well, how can I better communicate? Because this was a bad misunderstanding, and maybe I didn't do a good job at communicating myself. There's a lot of different things you might focus on in those times of dissension and disagreement. But whatever the central focus is, it cannot be our selfish desires. It cannot be about me. It cannot be that I'm going to win or We're going to get whatever's best for me. It cannot be selfish things like reputation, or I'm going to prove that I'm right, or I'm going to make sure that I don't give up, or I feel offended, and I'm going to focus on that offense. Those are things that the focus cannot be on. Those are areas where we need to get ourselves out of the way. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 5, speaking of love, describing love, says, "Love seeketh not her own." And that's an important, I think, foundational biblical principle in dealing with conflict. We try to solve the conflict. The peacemaker focuses on a way forward that's peaceable, not on a way forward that puts me in the best possible light or the best possible position. Now, in order to do that, in order to get ourselves out of the way, to not take it all personal, I think we need to have a healthy, one needs to have a healthy view of oneself. And here's where we see the interconnectedness of various aspects of our spiritual life and how one influences the other. It's difficult, or perhaps impossible, to not take a personal attack personally if you don't have a godly view of yourself to start with. We need to see ourselves as one who has sinned, but also as one who's been redeemed. You need to see yourself as dependent on God, but also as one who's been made in the image of God. You need to recognize that ultimately it's God's opinion that matters. It's about Him. It's not about me. We need to be humble enough to admit when we've made a mistake, but grounded enough in biblical truth of who we are in Christ, not to let personal attacks become personal, to be able to let it go without needing to feel like we have to defend our honor or defend our reputation. We have the example of Christ at the crucifixion when all sorts of accusations were made against him, and he answered them none. He didn't answer. And that's often the best approach if there's personal attacks. We need to get ourselves out of the way, even though it's not about you. It's about how can we find a peaceable way forward? How can I honor God in this? To be grounded enough in Christ, not to let that disrupt our very life, our very view of self, our very view of God. It's ultimately God's opinion, God's view that matters. It's not about me. The fourth point is we need to love the people that are involved. And that love, I'm speaking of Christian charity, as it's described various places in the Bible. My mind goes to 1 Corinthians chapter 13, the love chapter, where it gives various descriptions of what love is. Love is long-suffering, it's patient, it seeketh not our own, and so forth. It's that type of Christian love that's very, very necessary in times of disagreement. Love desires and seeks what is good for the other person. It pursues what's good for everyone involved, including the person that's in opposition to you. That's what love is. And sometimes it means sacrificing something that's our own. Talked about mercy in Sunday school this morning. Sometimes it means not insisting on what is maybe rightfully ours, but being willing to let it go for the sake of love. But sometimes it also means standing firm. Because Well, we can't violate our conscience. We can't go against what God teaches. But it's also not loving to enable another person to live in sin. That's not a loving thing to do either. Now, in the short term, if there is a situation where there's a person living in a self-destructive way, this is often the case in various addictions, drug addictions or otherwise, and then there's someone that enables them. Or often it's the case that I've seen many times where there's a younger person who's just profoundly unhealthy. And maybe they don't work, they don't do anything. And there's usually some enabler there, somebody that enables them. Well, the loving thing to do is to not aid in their own self-destruction. Now, in the short term, that doesn't seem like peace, because it usually gets very contentious. So the person will get very upset. But that's the loving thing to do. Peace is about finding a path forward, a path that's motivated by love, what's in the best interest of everybody involved, not just a temporary truce in fighting, but a path of peace. And an expression of love, the outworking of love, can take many, many different forms. Whether it's giving up something of our own that might be rightfully ours, but for the sake of love we give it up, or whether it's just standing firm because we can't do something for conscience sake, or we can't enable another person in their own self-destruction. Whatever it is, love needs to be present. We need to be considering the other person's needs, what's best for them in this situation. The fifth point here, now I finally come to responding. There's a lot of checking our own hearts and truly listening. But also comes a time to respond. And the fifth point is respond in a respectful and a loving tone of voice. And I thought of Proverbs 15, I believe, that well-known verse, "The soft answer turneth away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger." It was true when it was written, and it's certainly true today. A New Testament verse that speaks in many ways to the same situation, slightly different take, 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 9. "Render not evil for evil, or railing for railing." Many, many translations would use the word insult or insult for insult. "Render not evil for evil or insult for insult, but contrariwise," or instead, "blessing, knowing that ye are thereunto called, that ye should inherit a blessing." Our response needs to be respectful and in a loving tone of voice, that soft answer, not returning insult for insult, but doing good, returning good for evil. And the tone of our voice, our body language, can make a huge difference. Many times, the way we say it all means almost as much. Sometimes, in some situations, it means more than what we actually are saying. And it's especially true in the midst of conflict. We should be communicating in our words and our actions. We should be communicating the gospel of peace. I'm not here to fight. I'm not here to prove people wrong or destroy anybody. I'm trying to find a way forward. To avoid responding in a confrontational manner. Our responses should be communicating those things that I spoke about. It should be communicating that I heard you. Doesn't mean I agree with you. And that's sometimes where we get hung up. We think, well, we need to, if there's a lie or a falsehood in what the other person's saying, that we need to stop them right there. Well, no, that's, listening doesn't mean you're agreeing. Listening just means you're listening. You're trying to understand. So our response needs to communicate that we've heard what they're saying. Not that we agree, necessarily, but we've heard it. Our response needs to communicate that we're not trying to win. That's not how we're approaching this. It's not about me winning or them losing. Our response, in the way we respond, needs to communicate that it's not about me. And our response needs to communicate that we genuinely care for them. The focus, kind of a sub-point here on a response, is to focus on a resolution. Not who has to give in, but how can we resolve the issue? If you think back to that little story about the lemon, not, well, who has to give up the lemon, or maybe we have to cut it out, but what are we truly trying to accomplish, and how can we move forward in a peaceable way? How can we make sure, how can we try to meet the needs? And possibly the resolution is simply listening to them and letting them talk. Maybe the conflict is largely, you never listen to anything I have to hear. So maybe the resolution is, you don't really need to do anything. You just need to listen. Sometimes that's the resolution, to try to understand. Another sub-point in the response is to verbalize agreement where you can. And this often goes against our selfish nature. We tend to be on the defensive. We're looking where we disagree. We want to point that out. To pay attention, what points can I agree on? Not just where do I disagree, but what can I agree on? And even if the other person, if you think, well, they're way out in left field on this conflict, there's usually something that they say that's correct. Even if most of what they're saying, their perception's wrong, or maybe there's falsehoods, there's usually something that they're saying that's correct. And it can be very helpful to verbalize that. After all, it's not about winning and losing. It's about finding the truth together. And it can go a long way to say, you're right on this point. And if you can start on that. Examples that I tend perhaps use somewhat frequently is in my line of work is that, you know, I'm sure it's very frustrating not to be able to do things for yourself. Or maybe it's, yes, this was not your fault. If it wasn't, you don't want to say that if it wasn't. But to acknowledge the truth that they have spoken where you can, even if there's falsehoods in. And you get to that point. You don't just ignore the falsehoods, but agree where you can. Affirm the truth where you hear it. Because ultimately, as a Christian, as a peacemaker, we're interested in truth. It doesn't matter who says it, if they said it or I said it. If it's true, let's acknowledge the truth and try to move in that direction. The next sub-point that I have is when there's sin or falsehood. Sometimes there might be a personal sin, maybe there's falsehoods, whether it's lies or it's just inaccurate perceptions. When there's falsehoods or wrong actions involved, the focus should be what is right, not who is right. It's not about who's right and who's wrong, it's about what is right. And it's important spiritually for people to recognize their sin. But it's also true that the world is not divided into good people and bad people. We all have the capacity of going wrong. We might say, well, the world's divided into redeemed people and those who aren't redeemed, but even the redeemed have the capacity of going wrong. And so it's not about who is right, but what is right. And to recognize that. A quote that often runs through my mind is that the line between good and evil runs through every human heart. It's not just those that are right and those that are wrong, but through every human heart. What is right, not who is right. And when there are falsehoods, you want to address it. But again, it's not about you. You're working together, trying to resolve the issue. So you want to avoid phrases like, you are wrong. Well, that makes it about one person being wrong and the other person right. You're focused on truth. You might say, well, that's incorrect, or perhaps even better. It's, I heard you say this, but what I saw or what I understand, and to redirect, it's about finding truth. It's not about proving someone wrong. You shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free. It's not about me. It's not about them. It's about finding the truth. To focus, to work together as a team. If there's inaccuracies, you're trying to arrive at the truth. If there's sin, you're not there to condemn them. You're there to lovingly disciple them, to help restore them in a right relationship with God. And the last kind of sub-point I have in our response is the importance, to the best of our ability, to clearly communicate, even if what needs to be said is difficult. It's better to be clear, even if you know it's a contentious, even if you know it's a point of disagreement. In that example I gave earlier, where perhaps one person's living in a very destructive, self-destructive lifestyle, and there's someone else who's just enabling the behavior, what you need at that moment is for that person to say, this is what I see, and I'm not going to enable this any longer. That can seem a little scary. It seems a lot safer to say, well, I have something I need to do today, or I'm not able to kind of make excuses. But it's important to clearly communicate what needs to be said, even if it's difficult. If there's a disagreement that remains unresolved, maybe you just can't, you see it differently and you've talked and you can't arrive at the same conclusion, you don't want to ignore that fact. You want to be clear about that. You see it this way and I see it this way. And we're not trying to ignore that. To ignore it often makes it worse. To clearly communicate the point of disagreement. But even then, it doesn't need to end in a contentious, argumentative way. You can then focus perhaps on moving separate ways in a peaceable manner. Maybe it's a business relationship and an understanding you had with a customer, and you know, they think that you should be doing this, and you think there's a disagreement about what service can be provided. You try to resolve it, but there's no resolution, or you can't really come to a disagreement. To clearly communicate, well, this is where I see you're at, this is where I'm at. Maybe it's best for us to do business with other people. But even when you're not able to completely resolve it, you still can choose to move forward, perhaps in separate ways, in a way that's peaceable. As I reflect briefly on the subject, again, the tips that I've given are not a comprehensive list. There's much more that could be said that's certainly very important that hasn't been said. Things like the importance of forgiveness, the importance of being willing to compromise, to give in sometimes, the importance of long-suffering and patience, to name a few. And perhaps the bigger point, one of the bigger points there is forgiveness. And I thought about putting that in, but I realized, well, I have to stop somewhere. And like I said at the beginning, you find that all of our life is so interconnected. If I have sin in one area of life, what's going to affect the other area of life? So it's certainly not comprehensive. But I hope that with God's help, I've encouraged you to take your calling as a peacemaker seriously, And hopefully we've found some biblical direction, foundational things of how to practically live it out when we find ourselves in that situation where you see, well, right now I'm going to need to be the peacemaker in this situation, whether you're directly involved in it or not. To listen, to understand, truly understand where the other person's coming from. It doesn't mean you're agreeing with them. You're just trying to understand where they're coming from. To avoid a winning or losing mindset. To get ourselves, our selfish desires, the focus on me, to get that out of the way. To have a genuine love for the other person. To want what's best. And then to give a soft answer. And I believe as we put those biblical principles into practice, with God's help, we can function as peacemakers in a world that is so very full of strife. Let's kneel for prayer.